When the Roman military conquered a territory, they didn't just, leave a massive battalion of soldiers behind to keep the peace. They were way too smart for that.
Oh, absolutely. They had a much more subtle approach.
Right. Instead, they deployed this secret weapon. It was a small, highly trained civilian infiltration team. And they were designed to basically rewrite the local culture from the inside out.
Yeah, they would move in, open businesses, take on these positions of influence, and basically just acculturate the locals until everyone around them walked and talked like a Roman.
Exactly. And now, 2,000 years later, we have this modern manifesto urging people to use that exact same ancient military strategy, but for a completely different kind of kingdom.
Yeah. It's a wild concept.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are so glad you are here with us today. We've got a stack of sources centering on this really fascinating document titled The Missional Framework.
And it really doesn't read like your typical religious text at all.
No, not at all. It reads more like a strategic operations manual for building a 21st century movement. It's attempting to take the word church, which I think most of us picture as a fixed destination, right?
Right, a building with stained glass windows where you sit for an hour on a Sunday.
Exactly. It takes that and tries to completely redefine it into this living, breathing, invisible ecosystem that just permeates an entire city.
It is a massive paradigm shift. I mean, they are really trying to move away from an architectural model to a completely sociological one.
Yeah. Before we get too far into the mechanics of how they actually plan to pull this off, I do want to establish a very important ground rule for you, the listener.
Always a good idea.
Right. Because whether you consider yourself deeply religious, entirely secular, maybe an atheist, or you're just somewhere in between trying to figure it all out, our goal for this deep dive is not to take a side.
No, definitely not.
We are not here to preach at you or endorse any specific worldview. Our mission today is just to objectively unpack this source material. We want to understand the history, the mechanics, and honestly, just the sheer organizational strategy of this framework.
Because, frankly, the strategy of mobilizing thousands of people to alter a city's culture is fascinating, entirely regardless of your background.
It really is. Okay, so let's unpack this. Where do they even begin to justify such a huge, ambitious strategy?
Well, to understand the strategy, we really have to look at the foundational theology they present right at the beginning. And the document starts by dismantling the sort of traditional mainstream view of Christianity using a very specific visual metaphor.
Okay, I love a good visual. What is it?
So imagine the traditional Christian cross. The authors argue that for centuries, modern religion has basically only paid attention to the vertical beam.
Ah, okay. So like the direct elevator between a human falling at the bottom and God saving them up at the top.
Precisely that direct line. And they argue that if you only focus on that vertical beam, your religion becomes this highly individualized, very private affair.
Like it's just about me and my personal salvation.
Exactly. It's just about you, your personal redemption, your afterlife. It becomes a transaction. But the document argues that by ignoring the horizontal beam, the arms of the cross reaching outward, we have completely missed the whole point.
Because that horizontal axis represents something else entirely.
Yeah, it represents the restoration of literally everything else. The physical city, the social systems, the neighborhoods, the entire ecosystem around us.
Wow, okay. So it's basically a major critique of treating faith like a private fire insurance policy.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
Like, if the goal is pushing out to the very edges of that horizontal axis,
yeah,
you aren't just trying to fill pews on a Sunday. You're trying to achieve the wholeness of an entire culture.
Which, as you can imagine, is an incredibly daunting logistical challenge. I mean, if your stated goal is the restoration of an entire city's culture, how do you actually execute that?
Right, because you can't just mandate it.
Yeah.
You don't have an army to force compliance.
Exactly. Which brings us back to that Roman military secret weapon we opened the show with. The document takes us on a deep dive into the Greek and Roman history of a very specific word, and that word is ecclesia.
Ecclesia. Okay, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
That's the Greek word that gets translated as church in the Bible, right?
Right. Specifically in that famous passage, Matthew 16:18, where Jesus says, "I will build my church."
Okay.
But the text highlights this mind-blowing fact that ecclesia was not a religious word at all back then.
Wait, really? It had zero religious connotation.
None whatsoever initially. The ecclesia actually originated in ancient Greece as a secular governing assembly. Mm-hmm. But then the Roman Empire took it, perfected the concept and turned it into this brilliant geopolitical tool.
Oh, this is the cultural embassy thing we talked about.
Exactly. As you mentioned at the start, when Rome wanted to win the peace in a newly conquered territory, you know, to achieve the Pax Romana, they didn't just rely on swords, they sent an ecclesia.
So they handpicked a group of upstanding Roman citizens to move in and act as this cultural embassy.
Yeah, to live among the locals, model the Roman way of life, and just slowly transform the culture from the inside.
So wait, when Jesus said, I will build my ecclesia, instead of saying, I don't know, I will build my synagogue, or I will build my temple, which the document notes were totally existing, perfectly good religious words, he was deliberately co-opting a Roman military strategy.
That is exactly what the document argues.
It sounds like he was deploying an infiltration team to share his kingdom DNA.
Right. He took a secular, completely familiar concept of cultural infiltration and just infused it with his own message. He was basically telling his followers, look, I'm going to plant a small group of fully devoted agents right in the middle of a hostile culture.
And they're going to influence everything around them from the inside out.
Precisely.
That is wild. And you know what else blew my mind in this source material? It's this linguistic detail about the second half of that verse in Matthew.
Oh, the Hades part.
Yes. So Jesus says, I will build my ecclesia, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. Now, I think almost everyone, myself included, assumes Hades is just the Greek word for hell.
Right, like a fiery subterranean underworld with pitchforks and demons.
Exactly. But the etymology tells a completely different story.
It really does. The document notes that Hades actually comes from two distinct parts. You have the prefix a, which is a negative, and eido, which means to see.
So when you literally translate it, Hades means the unseen.
The unseen, yeah.
That completely changes the vibe of the whole mandate. Like, it's not about fighting some mythological monster underground.
No, not at all.
It's about this cultural embassy, this ecclesia, pushing back against unseen forces, the invisible cultural decay, the systemic loneliness, the hidden brokenness of a modern city.
Yeah, it frames the entire movement not as a defensive retreat, but as this offensive rescue mission. You know, this isn't about building a safe sanctuary to just hide from the world until you die. Yeah. It's about building a specialized unit designed to operate out in the open, addressing the unseen pain of the culture.
Wow. But, okay, recognizing that you need an infiltration team is the easy part.
Right.
The real challenge is operational.
Logistically, it's a nightmare.
Because how do you prevent these agents from burning out in a hostile culture? If you just tell a bunch of people, hey, go be a Roman ecclesia in downtown Manhattan or, you know, suburban Ohio, they're going to get exhausted and quit by Tuesday.
Oh, absolutely. That level of engagement requires a highly specific support structure, and the authors actually map out that support structure through a blueprint they call the agencies of the mission.
And they visualize this as three overlapping spheres.
Yes. So imagine three colored circles. You have the individual agent on one side, that's orange. You have the broader city ecosystem on the other side, also orange. And right in the middle, overlapping them both in blue, is the community hub, the church.
Okay. Let's hover on that middle hub for a second, because based on this whole ecclesia strategy, this community hub isn't the final destination. The document uses this incredibly bold underlined phrase, and I want to get your take on it. It says, the church does not have a mission. The mission has a church.
Yeah, that is a massive paradigm shift in organizational identity right there.
Okay, I have to push back here, though. The mission has a church. Isn't that just semantics?
How do you mean?
Like, isn't it just flipping the words around for a clever bumper sticker or a sleek marketing campaign? What is the actual practical difference for the listener trying to grasp how this changes things on a random Tuesday morning?
That's a fair question. Think about the friction of running any large organization. If a church has a mission, then the mission is really just one of many competing programs the organization runs.
Oh, I see.
Right. You have the youth group, the choir, the building committee, and, oh, sure, we also have a mission to help the poor on the first Saturday of the month. The institution becomes the center of the universe, and the mission is just a side project fighting for budget.
So the institution just ends up existing to sustain itself.
Exactly. But if the mission has a church, then the mission of restoring the world, that massive horizontal axis we talked about earlier, that becomes the entire point of existence.
Oh, okay.
The document explains that a normal, traditional church experience unconsciously calls people out of the world. It creates this inward, self-oriented culture where the goal is simply to show up on Sunday, sit in a row, face forward, consume some content, and feel good.
Like going to a spiritual movie theater.
Or a spa, just something you consume to relax. But this missional framework argues that the community gathering shouldn't be a theater at all. It should be a locker room.
A locker room. Okay, I like that.
Yeah, the church is just a safe place for healing, strategizing, and empowerment so that the people can be sent back out onto the field. They are preparing people for cultural impact between meetings, not just during them.
You know, there is a profound leadership lesson here for anyone listening, whether they're religious or not. If your weekly meetings are the main event, your organization is entirely inward-facing. You're just managing your own internal bureaucracy.
Right.
But if your meetings are just the locker room to prepare people for what they do outside the building, you're actually building a movement.
Yeah, it connects Sunday's inspiration directly to Monday's application.
Okay, so if the community is the locker room, who exactly is putting on the jersey and what play are they running out on the field?
That brings us to the outer spheres of their blueprint.
Right, the individual and the ecosystem. Let's look at the individual agent first. What the document calls the city changer.
So the strategy here requires a total democratization of purpose. The core premise is that every single disciple, and we're not just talking about the pastors with theological degrees or the paid staff here.
Right.
We're talking about the accountant, the barista, the software engineer. Every single person is an agent of the kingdom. They are all missionaries sent into a non-Christian culture. And the document calls this the MEME strategy. That's M-E-M-E.
Mobilizing, engaging, and modeling. Now, it's easy to just write, engage the culture on a whiteboard. But how do you actually train someone to do that without them just being, you know, weird and preachy at the office water cooler?
Right. Nobody wants that.
The friction of engaging a secular culture as a highly religious individual is notoriously high. People get defensive. Conversations get awkward really fast.
The authors actually address that friction head on. They don't leave the strategy vague at all. They demand highly specific outcomes from these agents.
Like what?
Well, incarnating the good news by actually knowing it deeply yourself, loving people by actively serving them with zero strings attached, and impacting the world by pursuing wholeness in your very specific neighborhood.
Okay, so it's very practical.
Very. And to ensure people don't just become those awkward proselytizers you mentioned, the framework outlines a very specific format for developing these individuals.
The three-step process.
Right. Step one is life on life. You cannot develop an agent through a weekly lecture. There has to be visibility and accessibility. You have to actually do life with them, modeling the behavior in real time.
Makes sense. What's step two?
Step two is in community. You practice what they call the one another's forgiving one another, bearing one another's burdens, and you do that within the safety of the locker room.
Ah, practicing before the game.
Exactly. And then step three is on mission. You learn how to establish influence by being a faithful, serving presence out in the secular world.
It all comes right back to that Roman strategy. You don't just send the generals to shout from a podium. You send the everyday citizens into the marketplace to earn trust.
Yep.
But, okay, this raises a massive logistical wall for me.
What's that?
Let's say you have a few hundred or even a few thousand of these highly trained, motivated individuals operating in a major metropolitan city. Is that actually enough to move the needle on huge systemic issues like poverty or addiction or cultural decay?
The document is brutally honest about this, actually, and it brings us to the final sphere in their blueprint. The missional ecosystem, basically the city itself. The text makes this staggering admission, and I'm going to quote it directly here. They say, "No one church or ministry, no matter how large, can make a dent in the lostness, pain, and brokenness of a city or a region on their own."
Wow. That is an incredible level of operational realism.
Isn't it?
You rarely see that kind of humility in religious or nonprofit literature. Usually, every organization acts like their specific brand is the silver bullet that's going to save the world.
Yeah, but they are flat out admitting that the sheer scale of urban brokenness completely outpaces any single organization's resources. If you actually want to achieve that horizontal axis of total restoration, you have to scale up way beyond your own walls.
You know, this sounds almost exactly like a corporate merger or like a massive nonprofit coalition.
Yeah.
Because they specify that these different groups need to come into unity, but they make a critical distinction. They say, this is not just shared activity, but shared goals or outcomes.
Yes.
That is huge. That's the difference between like five different charities all handing out soup on the exact same street corner versus five charities coordinating. So one handles emergency housing, one does job training, and one handles food security.
Exactly. But overcoming the human friction to achieve that kind of coordination is incredibly difficult.
Oh, I bet. Everyone wants their logo on the soup kitchen,
No,
right?
totally. Turf wars in charity and religious spaces are fierce. So, to manage this massive ecosystem and break down those egos, the document outlines a three-level process for unifying different organizations across a city. They call it the three C's.
The three C's. Okay, let's break down the mechanics of those because they seem highly calculated to bypass human stubbornness.
They really are. So, the first C is connect. The mechanism here is purely about creating relational unity. Before you ever ask a rival organization to share their budget or their volunteers with you, you simply facilitate opportunities for leaders to discover each other, have dialogue, and just do life together.
Okay, so you have to establish baseline trust before you can even talk strategy. That makes perfect sense. I mean, you aren't going to share resources with a competitor you don't even know. Dialogue absolutely has to precede action.
And once that trust is finally established, then you move to the second C, which is collaborate. This is where you actually catalyze action. Because the leaders now trust each other, they can identify specific spiritual, social, and cultural goals that are just too big for one group to tackle alone.
So they pool their influence and their capital to target the systemic issues.
Right.
Okay, so you connect to build trust, you collaborate to act on shared goals, but how do you know it's actually working and not just a giant, expensive waste of time? Like, is there a measurement phase here?
Yes, that is the third C, celebrate. And it's defined in the document as cultivating transformation by actually measuring the positive outcomes of these efforts on the culture and the region.
The fact that they explicitly use the concept of measurement is so telling to me. They aren't just, hoping for the best, throwing volunteers at a problem and patting themselves on the back. They want actual data.
Yeah, they want to see the needle move on the cultural, social, and spiritual health of the city.
That is a highly sophisticated systems-level approach to community building.
It really is. It treats the city as a measurable ecosystem rather than just some abstract concept. And as the document comes to a close, it provides this grand summary that ties this entire operational framework, the theology, the history, the organizational chart, into one cohesive alignment of biblical mandates.
Oh, I love when things tie together like that. How do they do it?
They take the three big greats of the New Testament and map them directly onto their three-sphere blueprint.
Okay, let's trace that alignment. So for the first sphere, the individual agent or the city changer, they map that to the Great Commission from the Book of Matthew.
Right. And the foundational mandate there is to go.
Then for the middle sphere, the community hub or the locker room, they map that to the Great Commandment from the Book of Mark. The foundational mandate is to love.
And finally, for the massive outer sphere, the collaborative city ecosystem, they map that to what they call the Great Collaboration from the Book of John, where Jesus specifically prays for unity among his followers. And the mandate there is together.
Which culminates in the ultimate mantra of this entire framework. When you combine all three, the operational directive is go in love together.
Yes,
Yeah.
go in love together. It really sums up the whole vision perfectly.
It is genuinely fascinating to see how ancient text and ancient organizational strategies are being sort of dusted off, reverse engineered, and then applied to modern community building.
It's brilliant.
Whether you agree with the underlying theology or you view this purely through a secular sociological lens, the logistical framework here is a masterclass in grassroots organization. I
Absolutely.
mean, mobilizing thousands of individuals to shift from passively sitting in a building to actively infiltrating and serving a city's social systems that requires a really brilliant understanding of human behavior.
It requires a total rewiring of how a group of people views their purpose. They have to stop seeing themselves as consumers of a Sunday event and start seeing themselves as active agents of restoration in their neighborhoods, their schools, and their workplaces.
They really have to embrace the friction of that horizontal axis.
They do.
And that brings us right back to where we started today. We opened by talking about how we usually picture a church as a heavy stone building with stained glass windows, just a fixed static destination on a map.
Yeah.
But this missional document is arguing that those physical walls need to come down, that the real structure isn't made of stone at all. It's an invisible, dynamic network moving silently through the streets, the boardrooms, and the neighborhoods. Much like the original Roman ecclesia creating a new kind of tax romana.
It's a completely different way of seeing the unseen forces shaping our cities.
It really is. So as we wrap up today's deep dive, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final provocative thought to ponder based on what we've unpacked today. If ancient Rome used the civilian ecclesia to build an empire, and this document is attempting to use that exact same concept to build a citywide spiritual network today, what other ancient societal strategies are hiding in plain sight?
That's a great question.
Right. What historical blueprints for organizing humans, building trust, and shifting culture are just waiting to be repurposed for modern missions, secular movements, or even your own community projects? Think about it. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.